So we're going to hear now at this point, please warmly welcome with me from Madrid, Daniel Fernandez Soto.
Thank you all. So welcome to this presentation. We're going to be talking today about human germline genome editing. I need to tell you this will be an interactive session, but don't be afraid, it will be interactive in the way that you will need to be talking, but you will need to be thinking a lot. Please have ready your smartphone because we will be using it, okay? But before it, I'm sorry that I will make a little introduction on genome editing. Maybe all of you are familiar with it and you don't need it, but just to be sure that we all know what we will be talking about, it will be a simple introduction, just as simple as what is DNA, and so we really know what we are talking about. DNA is the molecule that is in the inner part of all of our cells in our bodies. Is the principal component of the nucleus, and it's where it's written, let's say written, the information to build all the cell and all the organisms. It's what we inherit from our parents. We inherit half of our DNA from a mother and half of it from our father. So we inherit a lot of traits. Our eye color, our hair color, but also some genetic diseases. And so we were going to be talking today about genome editing. And genome is what we call the whole DNA of an organism. So the term genome editing means that we can change our DNA. We can thanks to technology and thanks to the recent advances in technology, we can precisely cut and introduce sequences in our DNA so that we can change it. We are going to be talking today about the possibility of using this in order to avoid genetic diseases. But this can be done in two ways. And the traditional distinction is between somatic and germline genome editing. Somatic means, let's take any one of you, if you have a genetic disease, we could use somatic genome editing and correct the, let's say, the defect that you have in your DNA right at the level of the cells that are affected. If you have a problem in your muscles, then we could have the DNA in your muscles change, but only the cells that are affected. Or if you have a blood disease, like a sickle cell disease, then we would be changing the DNA just in the cells that produce the blood cells. So it's like very specific. You go to the type of cells that you need to change in order to cure or to alleviate the symptoms of the disease. But one step further is what is called germline genome editing, and it is not changing any specific, well, it is in fact changing one specific type of cell, and that is the embryo. So this would mean when you perform the in vitro fertilization, you have the egg and the sperm fused together, then you would apply the technique and then you would change the DNA so that all the cells in the baby when he or she is born are modified, and then it's free from the disease that you are trying to prevent. So we have these two kinds of genome editing, and we will be talking today about the possibility and the ethical issues that come with modifying DNA at the level of the embryo. Okay, so we will be using this link. I will put it larger, but before I'm going to explain you what it will be about. You will find several questions, and you will need to ask them. They won't be about scientific things, but they will ask you about your opinion. They will tell you, do you think this is permissible? This should be forbidden? and you will need to answer. It's totally anonymous. In fact, it's not recording the answer, so you can play it over again. And actually, I really recommend you that once you finish, because maybe you answer no at the beginning, and then you finish, and you lose all of the questions. So if you reach the end of the questions, please go back again and change your answers to see different questions that you may have missed. There are no right or wrong answers. This is just to make you think about the issue. Again, if you reach the end before I tell you it's finished, you can go back again and explore other questions. Some warnings. First, to focus on the ethical part, we will not be talking now about safety or efficacy concerns. So we will be assuming it is a totally safe technique. We will leave the technical details aside just to focus on the ethical part. But you need to know that this is not actually true. There are safety and efficacy concerns that should be dealt with before we do that. But just to focus on the very interesting part, we will skip that. And another warning, it might look like it's biased, like you might be annoyed, like, wait, is he telling me this? He wants me to change my, but it works on both sides. So if you answer one question in one way, it will make you try to think about it, and if you answer it the other way, it will work the same. So don't be angry at me. And I will leave you some minutes, and then we recapitulate and we talk a bit about it. If you have any problem, just let me know and I can help you. These are both the same links. You can use the QR or write the link in your browser. And please feel free, if you want to comment with the people that is next to you, you can do it if you want. You can skip the introduction if you want, and you can go directly to the questions.
You often say they could be allowed, so it's always indicates it's not like a yes or no question. It's usually it's usually like a no or a maybe or something.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're not making any definite decision because it will keep you asking more questions to go in more detail. I will let you a couple minutes more, but just to let you know, if you haven't read a question about privacy and about the follow-up of the baby when he's born, you haven't seen all the questions, so you can keep on going to the beginning and changing. We have a couple of minutes more. Last minute. Okay, so you have the web page, you can keep on using it after if you want. I just want to highlight, if you have seen many questions, but I just want to highlight two issues that I think are particularly important. One is the question, are we our DNA? And I bring this up because I think as Christians we have sometimes the temptation to fall in the trap of genetic determinism, and maybe when we try to argue against genetic germline editing, for example, we say we shouldn't touch the DNA because it's like something sacred, or yeah, it's God's code, or yeah, and we have the temptation to think that to buy the discourse that we are determined by our DNA, and not even a single cell is not everything in one single cell is determined by the DNA. There are many factors. So in the case of a whole organism, it's far more complex. So we need to think about that. That we as Christians, we know that our value and our identity is not in our DNA, and it's not in whether our DNA is natural, artificial, or our identity is far more deep, far more profound than that. And another question that I think it's key, for me it's the key in this debate, is who has the right to decide what is normal or desirable? Because we talk about germline genome editing as treatment or as prevention, as it could be with vaccines, but it's not exactly that. It cannot be considered a treatment or a preventive intervention like vaccines, because we are not talking about changing a condition in someone that is already existing, that is born, but we are talking about someone that is not, that will be born or not, depending on our decision. And it is, behind that is the question, is it such thing as a life not worth living? Or can we decide what is normal and what we all should aspire to be? Or can we decide that certain conditions shouldn't exist? I think it's the main key here. But these are not really my take-home message. My take-home message for you is germline genome editing is a thing. It's a very hot topic today. You might be aware that, in fact, it has been already performed in China by a Chase Nix doctor. So it is technically possible to modify babies before they are born to avoid disease. So now the scientific community is like trying to deal with all of this and trying to see how can this be regulated? What do we want as a society for this? And the funny thing is that it's constantly seeking for what is called public engagement. There are people whose job is solely to try to engage with the society, to know what society thinks about this issue. So it's the perfect occasion for us as Christians to have a voice in the debate. But this is my message today, is if we really want to be useful in the debate, we really need to be able to go into the depths of the matter. We cannot simply stay at the surface and say this cannot be acceptable at all. DNA is sacred, we shouldn't touch DNA, and that's our position. Then we are not going to be useful for the debate. But if we are willing to go into the really interesting questions, then I think we can be very useful, we can be heard, and I think it's a great opportunity for the church. So that's all. If you have any comments, any thoughts, any questions, I have put here kind of a summary of the questions that you have been asking in the tool, in case you want to comment something about it, and also my email if you want to write me something. Thank you. Yeah.
Are you familiar with the movie Gattaca, and has that been a conversation starter with people who've seen the movie where these issues are brought up?
Yeah, I think Gattaca also brought up the issue of the value of genetic information and how it can be used what we're talking about all these days about to make a further division in society. And if you haven't seen the movie, it's really recommendable.
So you've been mostly referring to nuclear genome editing.
Mm-hmm.
But do you see differences either ethically or otherwise between that and editing mitochondrial DNA for mitochondrial
tissues? Mm-hmm. I don't see any strong difference in the ethical part of it. I see more differences technically and in the way it would be performed, and also on how it's maybe at the way this inherited is different. Maybe it would also affect some ethical issues of how far it could go. But I think the main question still remain in that question. Yeah, here.
Yeah, the one question there, what traits could be edited? What argument could there possibly be against editing out sickle cell anemia?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a simple thing, relatively, but who?
Sorry?
How could you argue against editing out something that simple, that's that profound?
Yeah, I think there are cases where it is really obvious that that you are addressing a a very hard disease, or you are really improving or preventing some conditions of life that are unbearable. But maybe there is some other area where we are not so sure. Maybe, for example, I don't know about the States, but I think in Europe the main leading cause of death is cardiovascular disease. If we could somehow prevent overweight, which could prevent cardiovascular disease, should we do that also, because it's the main cause of death? There are some areas that it's more difficult to address, but maybe sickle cell disease would be a case where it's easier. But yeah, it's now there is gene therapy for sickle cell disease, but it's somatic, so you wait till the baby is born and then you treat it. But then the question is, why don't you treat the baby before it is born? If you are going to do exactly the same thing, then why should we wait? But then we have other concerns about doing that. So it's, my message is, it's not so easy, and we as Christians should really think about it like more deeply than we usually do. There are both safety and efficacy things that need to be solved. For example, you are changing. Our genome is huge, millions of bases. So you want to change one particular part of it, but one particular safety concern is that you are changing what you want, but you may be changing other parts of the genome that you don't really know. That's the main concern now, but also that when you modify the embryo, depending on the stage, you don't get to modify the embryo when it's one single cell. That would be perfect. But you will modify it when there are several cells, and you can modify maybe a couple of them, and then the baby is born and half of their body is modified and is correct, but then the one that you really need, because it's where the disease is, it's not corrected. But all the technical issues could potentially be solved, but still the ethical question would remain. So that's why it's important to focus also on the ethical part while there are still safety and efficacy concerns. Yeah?
So I'll go ahead and give my bias, because my graduate work was trying to fix sickle cell in my PhD, so mm-hmm. That's fine. But to answer his question, it could be also things like it helped prevent malaria in some areas. Yeah. So there are things like that.
Hmm.
My question for you is, I think some of those type of single gene disorders are probably, I think most people will probably agree, fine. What about disorders that affect personality? What would you think about that?
Yeah. We were talking about it during our lunch. Yeah, scientifically, today it's hard to imagine that we will be able to map behavior to specific parts of the genome that we. But it might come a time that we are able to do that. If we could change a part in one of our genes to increase a little bit our EQ, IQ, would that be acceptable or not? Yeah, it's tricky. It's quite tricky. It's what is called the slippery slope. And once you begin, it's difficult to. Yeah, you were mentioning malaria prevention. Yeah, in fact, the one case that we know that has happened, the Chinese case, the babies were modified to make them resistant to HIV, which is somehow strange. It's not that these babies were going to develop a genetic disease and then he cured them. it's like they are more resistant than the average population to this virus, and it's not, it was not even needed because the father was affected but not the mother, so there was not a direct risk of infection. So yeah, it's quite difficult to set the line, and the question that always comes to my mind is, who should decide where is the line and why? Yeah? No.
Last question.
Quick comment and question. So in response to your question, are we our DNA? I'm going to say a resounding no. I think I know that because I have identical twin girls who are very distinct.
Yeah.
And related to that, it seems like there's a black box, is that, you know, we all think that DNA influences traits and stuff, but how that happens is still a big mystery.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a sizable portion, that maybe 30%, that is not due to DNA, or even maybe the environment. In my case, my daughters have not the exact same environment, but very, very, very similar environment. And is there any thinking as to what is that kind of black box? Just kind of random things, flukes in biology, germline mutations maybe?
Yeah, there's epigenetics, that it's one additional level of control over genetics, and that sometimes it can also be inherited, so it's another level of complexity, even more complex. But there's a big part of the environment and how you grow up and what you're exposed to, even I think in the womb. But now I'm remembering also, not the twins are a very good example of how we are not only our DNA, but there is another example, I don't know if you know about it, but there are people who are born chimeras. In the womb, there were two embryos different, and then they fused, and then half of the person has cells coming from one embryo, so one genome, and half of the person having a different genome. Is not common, but it's something that happens too. So it makes us think about what is our identity, and yeah, I think it's very interesting.
Well, I trust the conversation will continue over refreshments.
Yeah.
I want to say thank you again.
Thank you.